plate a potential nugget.
So let's talk about the conflict loop, Jen. You actually say that we end up getting into a vicious loop and we struggle to get out of it. Can you talk a little bit about what the conflict loop is? And, and of course, we'll talk at length about how we get out of this, but it'd be good to talk about the conflict loop first.
Sure. When we are stuck in conflict, we've got our conflict habit that interacts with other people's conflict habits, and those conflict habits form a pattern of interaction. And they tend to get locked in this pattern of interaction. And so if you think about this as like a circle, that's just a never-ending circle. It just goes around and around and around. You can imagine yourself stuck on this conflict loop. And the question that all of my work today really deals with is, how do we put a break in this pattern so that we can have a little space to move and ask ourselves, how can I get off of this conflict loop?
And you talk about common conflict habits, and you break them into four. You briefly spoke about one of them. But could you sort of lay out the framework here, Jen, in a way? This is sort of the underlying foundation based on which we start realizing where we are coming from and where the other person is coming from. So if you could talk a little bit about the four different approaches to conflict that we end up gravitating towards.
Yes. So there are four conflict habits. One of them is one that I mentioned before, which is that some of us, in our quest to win a conflict, we might feel competitive, and this can be a healthy thing. But when we take it to an extreme, when we habitually want to win a conflict, it can get to the point where we end up, or other people end up experiencing us as blaming them. And so we will kind of go on the attack and blame other people. In contrast, others of us habitually blame ourselves. We may blame and shame ourselves. So again, we may do this with good intentions. So our intention may be to learn from a situation and do better next time. But when we habitually do this, sometimes we end up stewing in our own negative self-talk, which doesn't free us from any kind of conflict whatsoever. It just keeps us stuck in that conflict situation. The third conflict habit is shut down. And that is where we may, again, well-intentionally avoid a conflict situation, which can be a helpful way to deal with conflict when, for example, the issue is not that important to you, or the person you're dealing with is not that important to you, and so avoidance can be useful. But again, when that's the only way that we know how to deal with conflict, and we're avoiding issues that are important, or we're avoiding people whose relationships are important to us, then it becomes an unhealthy way to deal with conflict. And what typically happens is that the conflict, will avoid. The conflict is kind of bubbling slowly, simmering, and then boom, it explodes at a point when we least expect it. And then we have to go deal with that, and we're not prepared. And then finally, one of the other ones that we talked about before is relentlessly collaborate. And that is where we have been taught, often, like we were saying before, from a young age, that the way to deal with conflict is to offer other people options, think about what their interests might be, come up with creative solutions, work with them to come up with those creative solutions. And again, that's a really excellent toolbox and skill set to have. And for so many millennia, people didn't have that way of thinking about dealing with conflict. And we got into all sorts of messes because we didn't have that skill set. But even that, people can get so tied and committed to using this collaborative skill set that we end up pouring energy, time, resources, money into trying to work things out with someone or a group of people who just aren't interested in collaborating or cooperating with us. And so there's all that, wasted time, money, energy, resources down the drain. And so there's got to be a better way. So actually, there's a free quiz online that people can take if they're interested to find out which one of these four conflict habits is your default. And if you go to optimaloutcomesbook.com/assessment, you'll find the quiz and you can take it. It's fun and helps people figure it out quickly.
I'm sure. And I guess to your point, blaming, shutting down, and shaming have a negative connotation. But as you say, collaboration has a positive connotation in most situations. So it's quite counterintuitive to hear that it could sort of be a limiting factor in us getting to a meaningful place. Could you talk a little bit about maybe what sorts of circumstances lead us to one of these four clusters? I'm sure each journey is unique, but are there kinds of situations that lead people to eventually to gravitate towards one of these four buckets?
Yes. It's typically these habits are formed based on how we grew up and not necessarily by our family of origin, although very commonly that is, what we see modeled by our families is often what we pick up about how we're supposed to deal with conflict. So I've often had clients say to me, in my family, we just avoided conflict. It was a very quiet dinner table. There was no conflict, but that doesn't mean that conflict didn't exist. What my point to them is, that doesn't mean conflict didn't exist. It just means that people's way of dealing with it was to not deal with it. Similarly, like I was saying before about relentlessly collaborating, I learned as a 20-year-old in my first company that I worked with called Interaction Associates. It was very big on collaboration and taught people how to collaborate with each other. And so I think a lot of people learn that when you're in a work environment. But you could certainly learn from a young age how to deal with conflict from things that you learn at school, from teachers. Or from other family members or from religious figures in your life. But people, we typically pick these things up without realizing that we're picking them up from a pretty young age.
If I reflect on the insight from Jen, I grew up in a context where the narrative around conflict was often that it's a bad thing. Peace and harmony was something that would be emphasized. It's like the dinner table that Jen speaks about where there's silence on the table, but that doesn't mean that the conflict doesn't exist. But my wife, who grew up in an armed forces household, came from a very different background. There was free speech, and engaging in a healthy debate and disagreement was a way of life. And I can see how that plays out when we interact, and it's an interesting experiment now that Jen talks a little bit about the four default conflict habits. Like in most things, I guess having some language around this helps us understand what's going on and hopefully gives us a sense of what conflict loop we're getting stuck into and therefore what it might take to come out of it. For me, the biggest challenge has been that when I face conflict, I often gravitate towards a shutdown kind of an approach by default, with the implicit assumption that it'll reduce the conflict, and very often I realize that it's counterproductive. You might want to think a little bit about what your default conflict preference is and where it comes from. Thank you for listening. For more, please visit playtopotential.com.